You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's AG500. That's right. Math is so tough. So I went from 499 to 499.5 to 499¾ because I decided that for Andy's Girls 500, following many AG ideas, hopes, dreams, that AG500 would be, I think, the first ever clip episode of AG looking back at some favorite moments. Now, I solicited ideas from AGs on IG, many of which are represented in the clips selected, and this was an undertaking. Let us all remember 500, because I don't know that I'm going to do this ever again, because attempting to go through just remembering what has even happened over 500 episodes has been really tough. So this is not intended to be an all-encompassing look at the 500 episodes of AG, but truly some favorite moments throughout the course of the last, oh my God, math is hard, 7-ish years? How nuts is that? I mean, there have been so many evolutions of Andy's Girls, but the thing that I find really special about it is that while opinions change, the way I'm even communicating things change, certainly guests change over the course of the last several years, the show itself, I think, has stayed pretty consistent from the start, from AG1 to now, which is this thing that I kind of make an LOL about, the idea that it's a combination of C-SPAN and Ayanla Fix My Life, that it's truly a show about the psychology behind The Real Housewives and how our own experiences influence our interpretations of what we're watching on screen, and sometimes a lot of conversation about what happens off. So I'm so thankful to all of you for being part, again, of the first and possibly last time I will ever do this, this kind of look back. Now, when thinking about the moments that I wanted to share and celebrate and think about, there are so many different emotions that came out. But obviously, we have to start at the beginning. So I thought, let's all just take a moment and hear the wonderful lyrical, what's this voice that I'm doing? What's happening? Happy Monday. Just really taking a seat and starting at the beginning with AG1. Now, I sort of thought up Andy's Girls by thinking of everything but AG. I knew that I wanted to do a podcast, but I didn't know about what. So there, at some point in the graveyard of notes in my notes app in my phone, there exists a list from several years ago of like, here's ideas and here's the name. And I think I should go off the name of the podcast and that'll influence what it was that I wanted to talk about. And I spoke to a friend who worked in strategy. And I remember we would have these sessions of like talking about things and what should this show be? And I realized honestly that it sounded like work, number one, which I certainly did not want to do. And number two, that really what I wanted to talk about was Housewives, that there were all these incredible shows that talk about, you know, politics and society and life, and all of that is all fine and good. Often those influence episodes and conversation on AG. But at the end of the day, all I wanted to do was talk about Housewives. At that time, I was working full time as an event consultant, producing galas and small cocktail parties, whatever it was, for electeds, for individuals here in New York City, and had produced a gala for several years for a graduate school of journalism here in New York. And they had a class on how to start a podcast. Now, I don't remember if I actually took the class, but I remember seeing a flyer for the class. And I thought, that sounds like a good idea. And a colleague lent me his small little recorder, and that is, in fact, what we used for the first many, many, many episodes until we reached this sort of generational point of going from hashtag old audio to new audio, and then new audio was constantly, constantly updated. And in fact, if you've been listening to the last several episodes of Andy's Girls, there has been another iteration of new audio that I think has been a magical update. So I, you know, invited over a friend who I went to college with, Damian Bellino. We had gone to school together at Marymount Manhattan and had engaged in a lot of Bravo discourse on Facebook, may its memory be a blessing. And I said to Damian, why don't you come over and we're just going to press record. I have no idea what this is going to be like. And we're just going to kind of play it by ear. And that's how the show started and kind of took hold. I remember the first day, maybe, I don't even know if this is right, first couple days we had like 400 downloads, and I thought, how is that possible on the face of the universe that I would have 400 downloads of this thing that was just done in my living room sitting on the old people's couch, just kind of chatting, shooting the shit, arguing, and everything else. And that's what happened. And after, God, I don't know how long it was, several months maybe, Damian kind of said, listen, I don't have the time to devote to this. I don't think I can move forward with the show. Completely understandable. And, you know, working on a podcast when we didn't know what we were doing, in addition to work stuff, where I'm sure we were just trying to figure out what we were doing, was a huge, huge endeavor and commitment. And I remember at that point, I think it was in the 20s, like AG 20 something. At that point, I had to decide for myself, okay, so should I start something new? Is there something that I want to work on? And I really thought about it. And it's a point that I think many people can appreciate of going through in their lives of like, okay, we're being told a no, or this door is closing. Do we open a window, or do we just ourselves reopen the door? And I decided on the latter. I told Damian, you know, I'm actually interested in continuing this and seeing what happens. And that was 20 episodes in. For better or worse, Andy's Girls could have ended then, but I decided, no, this is something I like to do. I enjoy it. And it's a way to utilize my voice that's different from what I'm doing for work, but really connected to what I love to do in life. And you know, not that anybody's asking my opinion on this, but if you're thinking about putting a podcast together, a show together, or a change of direction in your life, the suggestion and recommendation that I would make, the thing that I have to keep reminding myself, is like, just move toward what it is that you genuinely enjoy doing. And maybe you'll figure out a way to monetize it. For me, that has been genuinely a recent, in the last couple years, ability to do so. I did not have advertising on the podcast for the first many, many, many years, both because I didn't understand how to do it and I was nervous about whether or not that would change the conversations happening on the pod and also the mechanics of doing it. But look for the thing that you really enjoy doing. What's the thing that you do when you kind of need to disconnect or connect with people in a different way? It might feel like a quote unquote kind of like puff, not like a puff piece, but sort of the idea of this thing that might feel lighter than what you're supposed to do, but you're supposed to do what you want to do. And I think that's been, for me, the most rewarding part of this, is to have conversations with people and almost subvert the idea of talking about Bravo or making a job, a career even, out of talking about Bravo. Instead of it being like, what do you do in your free time? This is something I do in my free time and the not so free time. And talking to people who work in a variety of different areas and really owning the fact that this is something that brings me joy. This is something that I love to do, and I'm still figuring out some of the mechanics of it, but it continues to grow, which I'm so appreciative of. So as the pod continues to kind of grow and evolve, the thing that has been so sort of difficult, one of the reasons that I've pushed off really finalizing all these clips and going through episode to figure out moments that I wanted to include, was the realization that my voice has changed, my opinions have changed, the way I communicate about things have changed. Jokes that I made as a one-off several years ago, I would never think of doing now. The way that I discuss what it is that I want to share on the pod has changed in a number of ways. Shout out therapy for both like opening me up and also inserting boundaries into the mix as well. There have been so many different iterations of AG that have led me almost spiral a little bit when I'm listening to really old episodes and like, what did I say? And I meant what? But that's also kind of the joy of this. It's the normalized changing your mind based on new information. Also giving yourself a little bit of grace for however it was that you wanted to express yourself years ago. But honestly, the shock of, oh my God, I stand who for how long and what. And I was so mad at this. It's been kind of incredible to just kind of go through the AG archives, something that I really don't do. So I thank all of you for enabling AG to get to this point, for this kind of look back. And what better way to look back than starting with AG1, the beginning, when Damien and I sat down in my apartment with that little recorder that all of you guys used to get so upset about, understandably so, I have to tell you, in listening to these old episodes, I'm like, Jesus Christ. So we just kind of started at the very beginning. And this is a little part, the beginning part of the first episode of Anti-Scrolls. Okay, first off, I can't believe this is happening. I am so excited.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Are you so thrilled to be at my Upper East Side mansion estate? This is just like Sonia's townhouse. Which is beautifully located next to a parking lot, from what I've heard. I think it's just the most special of things.
I think that makes sense. I feel like the Countess here tonight.
Do you? Uh-huh. Am I your new fiancé? Did we meet 10 minutes ago and you gave me a ring?
So Real Housewives of New York premiere this week. Was it everything that you hoped it would be?
It was everything I hoped it would be, in that it was a new episode that I hadn't seen until I watched it, and then I watched it 3 times. And as you know, I am a Housewife super fan. I couldn't be more devoted. I have been known to discuss Housewives in professional meetings. I remember when Brooks Ayers first released a statement saying, like, I have cancer-ish, like, don't worry about it, no big deal. Like, I Google image test results, but, like, it's because I really have it. And I found out during a meeting at work and screamed in the meeting and said, I'm so sorry. It was, like, a senior staff meeting. I was like, we just need to talk about this for a second because I need to talk it out. Because it was so important in my life to talk about that. Since Orange County, which I didn't at the time when it started, didn't 100% understand what was happening, except that it was supposed to be a cheaper version of Desperate Housewives. Right. And then it just took off and I was in it.
There have been so many different kinds of conversations that have existed on AG, but the one that really is one that I think about when people ask me what Anti-Scrolls is about, this conversation is one I point to most frequently and consistently. Episode 240, where Crystal Kung-Minkoff and I sat down at her hotel room in New York City. She was in town to record Watch What Happens Live, and Rob joined us later on in the interview. You can hear me scream when he tells me information I absolutely did not know, that he created Ursula. I'm recording this special episode in the Clawfist. Directly behind my head is an illustration of Ursula that Rob drew for me after our conversation on AG, which is something I treasure. And when there are moments in which I feel down, I truly think to myself, big Ursula energy. Like, let us harness the spirit of our favorite small business owner, Ursula from The Little Mermaid. But circling back to Crystal, it was, to my understanding, it sounded like a train just went by. I don't know if you guys heard that. To my understanding, this might be the first conversation that's happened, maybe between a podcaster and a housewife, in talking about their shared experiences with eating disorder and body dysmorphia. It was something that happened, I think, genuinely, because I knew prior to recording this episode that Crystal was an AG listener. And so I knew that she had an understanding of the kinds of conversations that happen on AG, the fact that this isn't a recap podcast. We really kind of go into the nitty gritty, and I certainly wanted to follow her lead. However, she wanted to talk about her experiences at this point. This is, you know, dealing with the blowback, her first season. We're talking, this combo happened a couple years ago, but talking about what she has learned as a result of joining Housewives and how that has impacted her ongoing journey with having an ED and body dysmorphia, and just kind of like sharing our own stories with each other and being really vulnerable, both of us getting verklempt at points, certainly a very emo kind of talk, was for me really grounding and honestly rewarding, that there was the opportunity to connect with someone who I enjoyed watching on TV every week and certainly discussing on the pod, but getting into our own experiences with having eating disorders and how that shaped my experience as a viewer and content creator when it came to the whole uproar of, you know, using certain words to describe how she felt when Sutton walked in on her half naked during her first cast trip. And talking about the use of the word violated in all of that. And but having a really vulnerable convo that this is kind of like peak AG in terms of it being an episode that included shared vulnerability and also a feeling of kind of honestly sort of like emotional safety with each other. And I was so thankful to her for coming on. She really got to the point. I did not know what direction the pod was going to go on. Sometimes Crystal came on the podcast, which was just kind of us figuring out the mechanics. I didn't go through anybody on her team for that. There are occasions in which I will go through potentially the network or someone's publicist or someone's assistant or someone on someone's team who doesn't have a title but seems to do an awful lot of work. And in those circumstances, I've been asked before for like, can you give me specific questions? To which I say, I cannot. No, thank you. Both because I can't really hold to it. It's not that kind of show. And also it's very much stream of consciousness and goes off the energy of how we are in the room or the Zoom and can go in any number of directions. So I wouldn't want to, you know, make a person think that it's going to be about points X, Y, Z if we kind of meander and on a different route. And so with Crystal, I wasn't sure what direction this would go in. And I really kind of went off of her lead and was really so thankful for how she opened up. So this is just a little look at episode 240 with Crystal Kungninkoff, which was recorded here in New York City. And here we go. You know, there is a level of people just don't know. If you haven't experienced it,
well,
you may just not know.
Yeah, if you don't know. And I don't begrudge anyone who can't connect with that, because there's so many things that I can seemingly feel look cold, or like I'll say that. Like if I haven't experienced it, if I don't know anyone with it, I want to know. I want to learn. But if you don't, if you've never had anything, it's hard to connect, you know? But I did get a lot of messages after from people who have eating disorders who very much understood my experience. And maybe you're right. Like you said, like people, there's a wall. So the people that don't want to understand how I felt, maybe it's uncomfortable for them to talk about it, you know, or really understand what an eating disorder is and body dysmorphia. It's you know, it's like all my friends who have, I think most people have, especially women, you know, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, I wish I enjoyed looking like that 10 years, you know, when I was 25 mm-hmm. and I was thought, you know, and it's so weird to watch it so recently, mm-hmm. you know, and like, oh my God, like I can look at myself now on TV, like, oh, I look good there. Mm-hmm. But I felt terrible.
I so get
it. And I still feel terrible now, even though I know that like I can't connect them. Mm. I cannot connect it. I feel physically uncomfortable all the time. And it's not like so hard on me, because I think it's been so long, as you said, from childhood,
yeah,
that it's not debilitating. It's like I've come to a comfort mm-hmm. of being uncomfortable, mm-hmm. which is probably a messed up thing.
No, I'm nodding. I'm like, it definitely helped me during COVID. I was like, oh, well, here's my special buddy.
Yeah. So it's so complicated and nuanced mm-hmm. and only if you can experience, and I even got some DMs from people, not too many, but like, that's not, you don't have a real eating disorder. I do.
Oh my God.
But I respond to those people, you know, even like, because I said, this is my experience, whatever I'm talking about is my experience. Like I very much have one. Mm-hmm. I've been to a lot of therapy about it. But I think for me, it's like, the lesson learned, back to the original question of watching back, is like, I would love to, if I can learn to just one inch closer to being more comfortable, mm-hmm. by watching the show and just keep processing that experience of remembering how I feel, watching it now, remember, if I just keep going through that, maybe, luckily, I can get one step further to mm-hmm. feeling okay, which will help me with my eating disorder. Because I don't want it anymore. And I know it will be with me forever. Mm-hmm. I know that it's a long-term thing. But just one step closer, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's something that Dr. K and I work on a lot, which is like she hates when I talk about having a quote-unquote eating disorder. Because she's like, you know, it is what it is. But that is not in the personality identification process. Eating disorder is not one of the letters chosen. Mm. And it's so often the ways that I think about myself start with that, because it starts with your physical being. It starts with like, are you comfortable in your body, or how do you treat your body as a reaction to outside circumstances, or the ways that you cross boundaries with yourself, with your physical being, that are actually a form of coping.
Right.
And it's understanding that it's like a weird thing when you think about the phrase disordered eating, because yes, it is technically and accurately disordered eating, but it's a perspective that was based for many people in the idea of needing a sense of control. And
it's totally control based.
Yeah, it's control based. And it's like, what's the best way to think about this in terms of, without feeling like I'm minimizing myself or anyone else, like the idea of understanding that, you know, I'm always going to have a reaction to circumstance. And sometimes the reaction is healthy and sometimes it's not. And for a long time, and I still do this, I put up real serious boundaries with people where I'm like, don't tell me you're going to X or Y. Don't talk to me about how you feel about your body, because I'm afraid it's going to trigger me. And what I've been trying to work through in my own life, or if somebody says something negative about, or if I think they're going to say something mm-hmm. negative, whatever that is, or God forbid, swiping right, like so many different areas. But in the idea of, you know, thinking about the maintenance of boundaries, what is to me probably healthier in the long run, or at least, you know, selfishly more interesting, is to think about the, okay, instead of laying out these boundaries and spinning out when they get crossed, like, be okay with something, with someone pushing up against them. Mm. Like, it's not so black and white, which is, I think, why I, with Andy's Girls, I like love to I lap up living in the world of gray, because life is not actually, it does not allow for that kind of regimented thinking, because a line will always be crossed. Someone doesn't know when they're interacting with me what my boundaries are. Right. And if the first thing they know is me expressing the boundaries to them, I'm already creating a boundary and like getting to know this person.
Right.
So for your choice to go on a reality show like Beverly Hills, like The Housewives generally, which in many ways is all about the crossing of boundaries,
yeah,
knowing your own journey as a human person and what you're going through, it's like an incredibly brave act. And to see what your experience was in Tahoe, and even your experience in defending the words that you used for how you felt and your refusal to apologize for words, I found it really impactful, especially because there's an element of tone policing where people focus on, I felt a certain way when a word was used, and not, why did she feel a certain way to begin with? Mm-hmm. And that episode really gets into so much more. And Crystal and I have become really friendly as a result of recording this episode. And I think we see things on Housewives maybe in a similar way, even with very different opinions of what's taking place. Obviously, she being there when the episodes are filmed might have a different perspective than I would as a viewer, content creator, podcast, or whatever else. When I was in LA after BravoCon, I went to Crystal and Rob's house for drinks, where I absolutely spilled wine on their people's couch. So that was a fun moment for me. Thank God it was white wine, because that could have gone in any number of ways had it been red. But thanks so much to Crystal for what was for me at least a really meaningful episode. Speaking of meaning, AG has given me the excuse to have a reason to connect with people who I've looked up to for a number of years. And if you had asked me at the beginning of AG who would be on my short list, on my dream list of guests on Andy's Girls, one of those names, certainly a very small list, would have included Roxane Gay. So imagine my shock and delight when Roxane guested on episode 216. It was incredibly meaningful. I was so I was certainly nervous, but like also excited. I was just genuinely so excited to talk to Roxane, who's an incredibly accomplished author and writer. Talk about content creation, a culture commentator. I would highly recommend all of her books, which are, I think at least one of which is in the Clawfist and others are spread throughout my home. It was a genuine thrill and delight to get the chance to talk all things Housewives and guilty pleasures, the idea of how it is that we as viewers appreciate our own interests, including in Housewives, and whether or not that should come with guilt. So here's a little bit of that conversation on episode 216 with the queen, Roxane Gay.
That's whenever you see a woman on these franchises whose time is short-lived, I think it is because they realize that they don't have the time, energy, or inclination to do what it takes to become Bravo famous. And then there are some women who are clearly made for it, who are like, you know what, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to make this my career for the next X number of years. I think we see that with some of the New Jersey ladies. We definitely see that with some of the New York women. And, you know, in Beverly Hills, you know, I think the thing that separates Beverly Hills from some of the other franchises is... that many of them have careers beyond being a housewife. And they have money beyond being a housewife. A lot of the others, their wealth is constructed. But like LVP is genuinely wealthy. From what I can tell, she may well also be bankrupt secretly behind the scenes. Because the other day I drove by Villa Blanca. And because I live in LA most of the time. And it was closed. And I mean, closed, the building is for lease and so on. So, you know, and also like when you look at some of the other LA women, Dorit, you know, we know that their money is funny. Mm-hmm. So Teddy Mellencamp, her money is inherited. And so on. So I think some of the housewives are willing to play that game and sort of stay in that, and some are not.
What's your experience in thinking about housewives' shame and guilty pleasures?
I feel not one ounce of shame about what I watch on television. I embrace it. I don't think it's anything to feel guilty about. People watch all kinds of things across a range of import. And what's important to me may not be important to the person next to me, but I don't feel the need to diminish my interests to make other people feel comfortable.
Do you think that housewives could ever exist with house husbands? How important is the idea of this being specifically told through the lens of womanhood?
I think it's incredibly important. Pretty much all of media throughout time has focused on men. And so even though there are plenty of things that we could talk about with regards to the representation of women and plenty of things to critique, this is a show about women. And it's awesome. I don't give a damn about husbands, honestly. I don't really need to see any of that.
It's an interesting dynamic when you think about the ways in which husbands as characters, as individual characters, not full-time representatives of the show, stars of the show, cast members even of the show, are important on a franchise like New Jersey. And then there are other franchises, you know, rest in peace, Dallas, where, hopefully, spiritually at least, where
there could be a conversation about a person's marriage or dynamic always seen through the lens of this woman's story, and yet these men are underutilized, which on one hand, it could the franchise could use some plot. On the other hand, this is an opportunity to recenter and refocus the idea of housewives, at least in this specific city, around women and women's stories.
You know,
you kind of lose that.
Yeah, I think the men are superfluous. I'll be honest. I think that in New Jersey, the way that they have inserted themselves into the narrative is typical. Like, they just can't handle not being the center of attention, especially
Joe
Gorga. My God, sir, get a job. Truly. Go find something to do with yourself. Go get a friend. This is not for you.
Paris is always a good idea. And when I schlep on over to Europe, to my favorite city in the world, I bring with me a few important phrases that I have learned from Housewives. C'est bon, chic c'est la vie. Je m'appelle the Countess, n'est-ce pas, Luann? And while those key phrases are important when speaking to any French bravo-holic, for other matters of life, that's where Rosetta Stone comes in. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including, of course, French. It features fast language acquisition. It immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you really learn to speak, to listen, and to think in that language. It's an intuitive process. You pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. J'adore Chris Manzo. Et toi? There's a speech recognition filter which gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's convenient with desktop and app options, and it's an amazing value. Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and language needs in life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. A steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, AGs can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today. In the words of Meredith Marks, when it comes to that week, week and a half before my period, I wish I was disengaging. My PMS is off the charts. Truly, Uber Eats needs to check in and say, it's about that time, isn't it? I know it is. The cravings are crazy. I want to crawl out of my skin. Now it's easier to manage PMS with Estro Control. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony and Estro Control, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. For AGs who are friends of perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause, Happy Mammoth has Hormone Harmony. It's not just a supplement for women going through those stages. It's also become a phenomenon. Women can't stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I'm engaging. I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Waze anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Waze other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Waze. Go to THEOUAI.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's THEOUAI.com with promo code Andy. Conversations around wellness and weight loss can be complicated. There's the Instagram filter we all see on IG and social media, and then IRL. And between $20 smoothies and daily ice baths, everyone is doing the most to hack the health system. But there's a better way. Row. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And you can sign up from the comfort of your own home. No scheduling a doctor's appointment, commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. The Row Body Program pairs a weekly shot with healthy lifestyle changes so you can lose 15 to 20% of your weight in a year on average and actually keep it off. Of course, medication must be paired with diet and exercise modifications in order to achieve any stated results. Medication cost is not included in the program. Patients must pay for medication separately. With Row, average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. You can sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today. You know, there are so many different kinds of episodes that exist on AG, ones where we're like hyper and losing our minds and laughing our asses off, and ones that feel like, sure, there's that too, but an awful lot of meaning attached to what's discussed. And it was a lot of fun to listen to an older episode with one of my absolute favorite people, Matt Rogers, who I asked to come on as a result of my fandom of his podcast, Lost Culturistas. He's also obviously an incredible actor and performer, singer. If you haven't listened to his Christmas album, you're really missing out. He invited me to the taping for his Showtime Christmas special, and it was literally one of the best nights of my life, as was attending Las Culturistas Live, the Culture Awards. And so having Matt on AG was just honestly, selfishly for me, an experience and a chance to talk all things Housewives with him and just have a sassy chat. And I'm so thankful he's guested on a number of episodes in the many episodes since. But in thinking about what kind of conversation to highlight, I knew that I wanted Matt to be included in this clip collaboration. Spectacular. And it seemed like we spent a lot of time talking about Beverly Hills, and how could you not? And in light of what's happening on Beverly Hills, the ongoing conversation about the Fox Force 5, may its memory not be a blessing, and also Kyle, who I know is a little bit of a trigger point for people, this was our take on what it was that we were watching at that point from AG342.
So when exactly is one single individual in this Fox Force whatever going to own up to a thing? Or allow one of their so we're living in a world where everything they do is right because there's an excuse for everything. it's not good. It doesn't make sense.
And then we watch scenes like this week where they talk about how Sutton is a mean girl bully.
With what army?
I mean.
With who?
Literal hours after she was called a cunt and cried, where her tears are considered suspect.
By the way, real tears. She is the bad person.
I mean,
period.
Absolutely. They say that she's the bad one, but she's okay in group settings. And it's like, how are you guys in group settings?
That is literally, that's the biggest gaslighting I've ever heard, because the way mean girls behave, we've seen it over the years, is they amass people that follow them and conspire to target one person, which is what you guys have been doing. You've been doing that. And you gaslight people into thinking that they're a loser. That's what mean girls do. And who are the people that they've accused of being that? Last year, Dorit called Garcelle a bully, which is that's a word that when you put onto someone, like you say mean girl, they tried to make Crystal seem like she was a mean girl and like someone who moved in social groups like this and like tried to like with the 14 girlfriends of it all, like they tried to paint her with that brush, and now they're saying it about Sutton. I have news for you. These are not the women in quote unquote power in this group or with the privilege of alliance members. You are doing this thing.
So what do you do, noting that the reunion is being filmed tomorrow? We're recording this on Thursday. What do you do if you're Andy? What's the reset here, if there is one? Or are you just engaging in a narrative that to many of us feels false?
I think Andy, who I've now met several times and I adore, needs to go harder on his faves.
Do you think he has capacity to?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think he's got to turn to Kyle, and I think we have to have, like, I think we need a reckoning for Kyle. I think Kyle should want, I think it's not a success unless Kyle leaves the reunion feeling like,
broken.
I want to quit. She needs to have a tough reunion, or else the literal edit doesn't make sense. She needs to answer for the fact that, like, someone will be like, Kyle, please. I don't want to talk about this right now, please. And then she turns around and says, and lights the match.
Right.
She needs to answer for that. It has happened numerous times, like 1.5 times an episode. She has to answer for it. Because guess what? It's not unclear. We don't really need to dig in anymore with Erica. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need another big episode with Erica, which is like, explain to us how you feel. She has told us.
Multiple times.
We need to get to the middle of this Kyle thing. Like, because that's what it is. Dorit is secondary to that, but Dorit is also a follower. Kyle is the leader and the protagonist of this show. The reason why the show is in the state that it's in is because of the way Kyle prefers to do things. And I don't want to feel this way about her. Like, I like watching the show when I'm watching it and I say, I'm Kyle. We need to be able to watch it and say, we are all Kyle. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and yet I've heard from so many people who are like, now you see what we've always felt. And I'm like, well, I don't have a response to that, except I haven't had that experience. So now I feel like, am I catching up or has this person changed?
Kyle, I think, and not everyone agrees with me on this, but Kyle has an it factor in a way where it's like, you get why, and a lot of mean girls have this. You understand why they've made it so far. You know what I mean? Like, she is so funny. She's gorgeous. She is a lot of fun. She probably talks really good shit. She looks people right in their eyes. When you are going through something, she's crying alongside you. She's extremely empathetic. She is a lot of fun. Camille has been saying it from the beginning. Even when she hated her at that season one reunion, Camille even said, you know, the thing about Kyle is she is the girl that you want to sit next to at the party. She's a lot of fun. And because that's all true, like, I think that there are certain members of the viewing audience, I think probably you and I are among them, that give her the benefit of the doubt a lot because we enjoy watching her.
Yes, and because, as you said, we empathize with her. We might see ourselves a little bit in her.
Yeah, and she is the center of this atmosphere. And I think that many times she has been a sympathetic figure because I think we also... A lot of people that watch the show may know what it's like to deal with a very chaotic person in your life, which was Kim. And I think that, you know, I think that she earned a lot of goodwill from seeming like the person in that relationship with her sister that, like, had really been long-suffering.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, this is also an edited television show with the purpose of entertaining us and telling a story that they decide we're seeing. So it's just interesting now that, like, all those characters that served as foils for Kyle are now gone, and her only foils are, like, abject awful. And she still is playing the same game she's always played with, like, the teams of it all. And it doesn't look right. So I guess my question is, like, Kyle, who actually are you? Who are you outside of deciding who you can and cannot defend? You know what I mean? Like, what is it? How do you feel about this? And if you do feel this way, can you tell someone how you feel? We've seen her do it before. And that makes me feel like maybe she's just tired. And that's why when she finally did do it last night, it seemed so fucking crazy.
Well, I feel like a part of it, too, is that regardless of how we feel about how her behavior and how it's magnified this season, you now have Kathy in the mix, who was seen last season as a huge fan favorite, came back friend of after whatever negotiation took place, and is now calling out Kyle's behavior. Kyle, who for a segment of the audience was seen as the voice of the audience, is now being told in real time by her older sister that her behavior is bullshit. And trying to control that behavior in the middle of these hot moments. Kyle, don't swear.
Yeah.
That was tough because you're watching a woman who's supposedly leading this show being put in her place by her older sister who has ultimate control in their dynamics. And I feel like what we're watching Kyle do now is to reshift that. Like, I still have control on this show. I'm not going to promote the tequila. I'm not going to do the things that are seen as, like, you don't even necessarily think of what she has done with Mauricio in the agency. You don't really think so much about Rena Rose's 18 launches that we've seen take place. Kathy's holding up a bottle of tequila being like, Nikki and her husband are investors, and Kyle won't allow it to happen because this is the control that she has in their relationship. It's through the lens of the show. But what happens when the show is no longer on your side? And now maybe nor is your sister. What does that do to the power, to the dynamics of their relationship?
Here's what I'll say. It is, I don't know if it's obvious to Kyle the ways that she's doing this. I think she might think she's like, oh, Kathy, and negging Kathy in the way that she maybe like did last year. Like, oh, look at my sister. She's such a fool. Kathy, come on. Like, oh, isn't she silly? I think she's playing this game of like, isn't Kathy silly? And Kathy may actually be trying to show a different side of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're not on the same page about the dynamic. Because I actually think you're right. That probably what happens in their actual dynamic is Kathy makes a decision about what's happening, and that's what's happening. Like when Kathy, with I think it was Nikki's wedding a few years ago, was like only invited half Kyle's family.
Mm.
Like, think about that. That's a move. This is like someone who is extremely triggered by her older sisters and like way more vulnerable and sensitive to what they say and do. I mean, let's all think about our own siblings. You know what I mean? There's dynamics from childhood that remain in your psyche as an adult and cause you, it's like with a parent, any family member, you know what I mean? It's just like, it's like when you go home for the holidays or whatever and you hear in your voice that you're sounding 15 again. You know what I mean? And you're like, what is that? It's because things trigger things. And so they stumbled into an edited dynamic, which was Kyle going, oh, Kathy, you're so silly. and Kathy being like, hunky dory. And now it's different. Maybe Kathy wants to reveal another side of herself, and Kyle's on this weird struggle trying to maintain all the dynamics and produce, and she looks crazy. And then Kathy says something like, don't swear. And so in this next episode, when they all buy fucking Kendall Jenner's tequila instead of Kathy's, and Kathy gets pissed off about it, it will all seem so dumb to us, and it will seem so blown out of proportion, I can predict, mm-hmm. but to them, it's going to be an extremely big deal. And that's kind of what I want to see on Housewives. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This stupid shit that exposes real things. Not this like engineered, alliance-driven, like stupid bullshit over dark stuff that like promotes hate online. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, what's happening with the tequila wars? Give me that. Give me that.
Now, there are, you know, all those conversations on AG, so full of meaning, so full of depth. Hopefully, that's the goal at least. And then there are moments where I just say, Louis Peitzman, you and I need to yell about Bethany and Carol during the height, the peak of that finale season of Bethany versus Carol. I found myself in this possibly odd position. For those who are OGs of the AG and have been around or have caught up since the episode began, I was certainly a very, very, very big Bethany fan, a super fan. I have Bethany merch still in my apartment from well before anything, like a hoodie that says, or a sweatshirt rather, crew neck sweatshirt that says like zero fucks in cursive, that I think she probably sold for a minute until she moved on to something else. But I was a longtime Bethany fan, you know, purchased all her episodes of Bethany Getting Married, Bethany Ever After, because I needed them for iTunes. God forbid something happens. There's the apocalypse. How am I going to access Bethany Frankel spinoff? And then I found myself in a different position, evolving away from that and finding that this person who I'd loved for so long was now quickly becoming a Housewives trigger. I knew at this point that Louis had a different take of what it was that we were watching during the height of Bethany v. Carol. I found myself pretty heavily on Team Carol, Louis on Team Bethany. And this was at the point that this was recorded, episode 74 was recorded. This was, to that point, the longest episode of AG that we had recorded. I think it was around 2 hours long, just of us yelling at each other in my bedroom. So this is just kind of a look back. All the different energies in the world. If there was an AG mood ring, it itself would be confused as to what the mood of the podcast could be. But this was an awful lot of fun. And Louis was a very, very, very good sport. So listen to a little bit of that conversation from episode 74.
It was so performative, the whole thing of how she was like trying to age herself down and trying to act like this much cooler, hipper, younger version of herself. I hated watching that. It felt very artificial. So for Bethany to call her on that and her to act like Bethany was crazy was more of her gaslighting bullshit that went on for the entire season.
I'm sorry. Are you saying Carol is the one that...
Okay. Can I quote Carol here telling Bethany it's not that deep when it clearly was that deep?
Okay.
Okay. Are you like losing it? Wait. Here, I'll give you one shot in Bethany's direction.
Okay.
The one thing I will say that I agree with Carol on is the thing with Adam and Bethany. Bethany was wrong about that.
100% she was.
Here's why she was wrong.
Okay.
She acted like Adam didn't want to do a charity thing without pay.
Yeah.
When actually what Bethany wanted was someone to help her brand her charity by taking photos of her doing charitable
and
work.
And not getting paid.
And not pay them for that, which right. is bullshit.
Right.
Adam should have been paid for that. It wasn't that he wasn't willing to like donate money to Puerto Rico. It was that he didn't want to like take vanity, like be part of Bethany's vanity project. And I think that her Puerto Rico work is real, but obviously it's also part of her brand.
So what do you think about Bethany? Totally agree with you. What do you think about Bethany saying over and over again, like, Carol seems really sad this season while she knows that cameras are on her? You don't think that's about like gaslighting and trying to edit
that's
footage?
That's not gaslighting. That's just like being a housewife. I'm saying that like she didn't say to her face, like, she's not telling. I mean, I think Carol was sad this season, by the way. I think she missed Adam. I think she was like losing it a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think hanging out with Tinsley all the time is very depressing. And that's not, I don't think that's gaslighting to say Carol seems sad.
So you think that their friendship just broke up because of what?
I think he broke up for a few reasons. I think Bethany was in the wrong with her Adam shit.
Yeah.
I think she handled that really badly. Uh-huh. And then she was like, he's a hanger-on. To be fair, Adam was a hanger-on who used the show to propel himself to whatever. Like, that was obviously what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So she wasn't wrong about that, but she was wrong in how she handled it. And she was wrong to, like, imply that Adam was uncharitable mm-hmm. and to yell at Carol for that. But I think they also just, like, grew apart and didn't like each other. They didn't need each other as much anymore. Or Carol definitely didn't need Bethany as much anymore. And I think Bethany's feelings were genuinely hurt and Carol was acting like there's nothing wrong. And that's what bothered me is that Carol kept acting like Bethany was imagining things. And that's what I mean when I say she was like all season, Carol was acting like Bethany was imagining this rift.
What?
You don't see that at all?
I really don't. I see Carol constantly trying to understand Bethany and regroup with her, and Bethany was totally closed off and sharp and mean and judgmental.
There was, oh my God, they were both awful. They were both awful to each other. There was never a version of that, them getting back together as friends. They were both.
I think at a certain point, Carol was over Bethany being best friends with Bethany 24/7, and Bethany emoted more loudly how upset she was by their friendship disintegrating, and that is what we watched.
I guess burn I just down. Like I don't know. I just found I see what you're saying. I think they both made mistakes, but I think that Carol by the end I was so much more on Bethany's side because Carol was being so like Carol's thinking about like I can't deal with Bethany crying, and it's like a lot of housewives' tears feel very fake to me, but I think Bethany's tears are genuine.
I totally agree with
and
you.
And I think that for Carol to be like I can't deal with you when you're crying all the time is like not very nice.
I think someone that is that broken and doesn't seek real help and expects or demands sympathy for being in a vicious cycle of pain is a lot to ask of a friend.
Okay,
and I
then
think
why
Carol
is then why is Carol friends with Dorinda, who is way more broken?
I mean, my goodness, can't talk about Bethany with also talking about Jill. Now, I have maybe taken a different kind of strategy or maybe have a different interest than I possibly should when it comes to housewives conversations. I don't chase them. I don't really look to housewives to guest on AG. There have been people who I've reached out to who have said yes, and I still need to schedule, and also people who I've thought to myself, is this really the time that this person should sit down? Are they really kind of open and able to have the kind of conversation that I would hope for, which is difficult, especially because the network often can be incredibly strict about any kind of media opportunity when seasons are going on. And then after a season ends, you know, that person is likely trying to figure out whether or not they're continuing with their franchise, which can make having certain open, honest conversations potentially difficult, and understandably so, which is why I found in having conversations with housewives that the ideal housewife to kind of connect with was one who was no longer on the franchise. Now, when AG began back in the olden days, in the era in which I was spiritually mid-20s and not spiritually mid-20s plus, Jill Zarin was one of the first housewives to sign on, and it was a total delight. I remember being so nervous and so excited to talk with Jill, who I've connected with since and interviewed for the Daily Beast and attended the Jill Zarin Luxury Lunch a few times to cover it, and has always been so incredibly generous. But it was just so fascinating to talk to her about whether or not she had been fired or how to use that language and how she feels about negotiating with the cast for future seasons and how salaries work as a group or collective or individual or whatever else. And it's interesting to hear her thoughts as stated years ago in light of what we now know about legacy and the legacy negosh not maybe going as planned for the group, which has now spurned Ultimate Girls Trip legacy. And who knows if there will be future trips? Who knows if Jill will be on any of those? So this is from episode 18, when Jill was on her phone, I think en route to take in a jet, I believe, to go to Florida. She was with her mom in the car and was so generous talking to us in the very, very early days, episode 18, about her experiences on New York, her thoughts on the current cast, the difficulty of casting New York because of a lot of the chaos that was happening at that time on the show. And so all thanks to Jill Zarin for this little chat. Let's take a listen.
When you look back on it, I don't know if you left on your own terms or if you did it. I mean, in a perfect situation, how would have things sort of ended with your final reign on reality TV as sort of the OG of New York?
Well, you know, I was kind of a wuss. So Bobby and I were overheard at a restaurant, and it ended up on page 6 that we were leaving the show. That Bobby said to Jill, Bobby was overheard telling Jill, we were at a restaurant, obviously the eavesdroppers, saying that they're leaving the show. So that was in the paper. And then after that, you know, we had been waiting to get our contracts for weeks and weeks and weeks. We kept on telling, it's coming. And I got ADD and I'm very impatient. And one night I was just very frustrated, and Bobby and I had talked about taking a 3-week trip to Europe that we wanted to take on the world. And we had to commit, you know what I mean? Because our date, you know, our time limit was literally up. Like, we had to book it or we're not getting it. So I sent them an email in the middle of the night saying, I'm done. Like that, you know, I love you all, and it was a great run, but I'm leaving the show. And I sent it to the producers and to Luann and to my friends on the show. Anyway, the next morning, it must have been like an Ambien thing. And the next morning I woke up knowing I sent that, and I just figured, oh, they won't believe me anyway, you know, and just let it ride, you know, let's see what happens. Well, they got it, and they were pissed, and they did not want me to quit. They wanted to fire me. So 3 weeks later, I believe that they probably would have made me an offer to stay, but because I did that, they officially fired me, which is so funny because it actually hurt my feelings, but I did it to myself, as I always do.
Wait, why did you?
You know, I self-sabotage myself. I've done it before. I think everybody does it sometimes. I self-sabotage myself. I did. So I really, you know, I had mixed feelings about coming back. I wanted to come back because of the fame and the being in the drama, being, you know, part of the group, and it, you know, being in the clique and the whole thing. Because I was getting along with everyone. Remember, I was good. I was best friends with Luann, and everything was good. The only one I had issues with maybe was Ramona, right. But that's what made the show good.
Right.
But I was good with Cindy and Alex. Even I was good with everyone. So I was actually, I came off that reunion clean. And so, you know, they fired me because they were mad that I had the nerve to quit. So then I was in a catch-22. Do I tell America, oh no, I quit first and then they fired me? Or does that sound like a lie? And so I just went with like what they fired me. But the people on the show and my housewives, they know I quit because they have my email. You know, it was in August. Right. So anyway, you know, it doesn't really matter. I left the show whether I quit or fired. It was my time to leave.
Why did you?
I needed to leave. I needed to go away with my husband and spend time with him. I went for 3 weeks to Europe, and we had the best time of our lives.
Jill, why didn't you ask Andy? Like, because you asked Andy, there's that video or that Watch What Happens Live interview where you sort of say, like, I didn't understand why you fired me. I think that you use that word. But why didn't you at that point sort of, like, turn the tables on him to say, like, right. I wanted to leave and needed to get away from this?
Because they did fire me, ultimately. You know what I mean? Like, they did call me up and say, we don't want you back. And yes, I could have said to him, what are you talking about? I sent you an email 3 weeks ago. I quit. But then I felt like it would have been like sour grape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't care about being fired. It doesn't matter to me. It's semantics. I was leaving the show. Whether I was fired or quit, I couldn't come back anymore.
It was also it was a huge shock. I mean, it was a shock to the viewers to lose you alongside Alex, alongside Kelly. I mean, it was like they took a real pivot in plot, I think, after that for a couple seasons.
Well, the interesting thing is that semantics wise, I really wasn't fired. My contract just wasn't picked up.
Right.
Like, they didn't cancel my contract.
Got it.
It just wasn't renewed.
That's really the truth. I mean, we all had a 1 year, year to year contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you know who I give a lot of credit to? Luann. I mean, the year after, Luann was put down to house.
Right, to a friend
housewife.
Of. And that was
and
her
Ramona
best year.
Was a full-time housewife. Well, how do you think I would have felt?
Oh, yeah.
I would have, like, jumped out the window. I don't do well in situations like that, where I'm valued at less than someone else that I started with, that I would get paid less. I would not have done well.
The interesting,
you know what? Give it to Luann. Now she's the queen.
The interesting thing was, though, I remember being surprised when she got demoted, essentially, to a friend of. And I think that was her strongest season because she was so carefree. And then the season that followed with everything, I think they're on, I think it was St. Bart's when they were there. And she was, you know, the be cool, don't be all uncool. I mean, that was great. That was great TV. That, well,
don't you see this? So their strategy worked. They said, right, if we promote you, then
you have
then
to bring it.
Bring it.
Right.
And then if you bring it, then we'll reward you. So now the girls are not, they're not, all the shows, from what I understand, are not equal. Like some shows, they get paid a salary, whether they perform or not. In other words, they get paid to do.
Understandable.
And then in some shows, and I don't know all of them, but I know New York, they get paid a per
episode?
They get paid per day, I think, and then they get paid for trips. So it's a very different formula for different shows. And I'm not really sure why it's not Favorite Nation.
And you can't talk about Bethany and can't talk about Jill without talking about Kelly Clore and Ben Simone. Now, for Andy's Girls 300, we did AG Live, which was a live show in New York, where I was joined by guest co-host Evan Ross Katz at Club Coming, this very small, amazing club downtown. We FaceTimed with Carol, who did not know that FaceTime included video, and was like, Sarah, why... why can the audience see me? And I said, Carol, because it's a FaceTime. So let's chat. She was so generous to participate, as Marge did as well. And then Kelly actually joined us on stage. Now, Kelly Clore and Ben Simone showed up looking like a goddamn supermodel, which I know she is, but it was she really, truly took my breath away. She was like a glamazon in the back of the room. We called her on stage for her portion of the live show. And she was so, so funny and interesting and just full Kelly mode. And talking to Kelly about Scary Island, talking to Kelly about hashtag systematic bullying, Evan and I were just, I think both of us would agree, overwhelmed at points, because it was just honestly so much fun. The audience certainly seemed to enjoy it as well. And AGs know that there is a sort of segment that began on AG that I really do primarily on the Patreon these days so that I can truly deep dive, called Satchels of Gold. Their listener thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clore and Ben Simone from Scary Island. So imagine my delight at this live show for AG 300, asking Kelly Clore and Ben Simone for her thoughts on A Satchel of Gold, which was sent by an AG, yes, whose name was Sarah, yes, who was also at the live show. I promise it wasn't me, although it was a great satchel to ask. So shout out to AG Sarah for such a great question to Kelly, and to Kelly for her openness in her response. It was a truly delightful episode. If you haven't listened to it yet, it's AG 300. And here is a peek at both the satchel and Kelly's response. In the history of Andy's Girls, Andy's Girls is a show all about the psychology behind the Real Housewives and shows on Bravo.
Right.
And there is a segment that we have where listeners send in their thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about housewives and episodes, and it's actually named in honor, as I say, I literally say on every episode in which a satchel is used, it's named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clore and Ben Simone. And they are, you know, they are satchels of gold. They're really thoughts and feels from AGs. And I actually have, what better time than the 300th episode of Andy's Girls, but now to ask a satchel of gold to Her Holiness Kelly Clore and Ben Simone. It's from an AG who I think is here tonight. Her name is Sarah. She's in New York City. It's not me. I just want to make that clear.
Wait, I'm like, Sarah.
I know. It's another Sarah. She's we like, are everywhere. Me. It's a Sarah with an H. She spells it properly. Anyway, so here's a satchel I just want to get your thoughts on from Sarah, who says, if you were to participate in the legacy Real Housewives of New York with all of our old favorites, would you return more consciously strategic about your storyline? And what parts of your life and story did you not share in the past that you would want us to see now? So the idea of like the receipts and the thinking about, you know, the Simon of it all, of like wanting, you know, like thinking more consciously, not to say less organic, but more organic to the reality that has become Real Housewives of New York. Would you be thinking more strategically about that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Okay.
What is the point of going on a show like Real Housewives if you're going to be strategic? That is disingenuous to you guys as viewers. Why would I do that? One of the reasons that you guys like me so much is because I do whatever I want to do. And I am unapologetic.
If she wants to run in front of a taxi cab in the streets of New York City, she's going to run in front of a taxi cab in the streets of New York City.
True story.
Do you still jog in front of traffic?
I do everywhere.
It's an iconic.
I'll never forget that scene. They were like going so fast.
That's
and I was
canon.
Like, I was like, oh my God, this is like super fast, like really fast. I was like, okay.
I love that.
You know what it is, though, is that for anyone that does exercise in New York City, when you walk down the street, everyone's like on their phone, there's umbrellas.
You can't do that when you're jogging in front of cars. No, you can't be on your phone.
There's like all these different things. So I like to bike. I like to run in the bike lane. Well, now people are like are constantly like screaming and yelling at me profanities like because I'm running in the bike lane. But like it's safe. It's a safe place for me.
It might not be for them though. I think that's why they're getting in touch.
But I'm unapologetic. I'm running. It's like 25 Kelly. Minutes. It's like it's not. I'm you know I'm like. On and off. It's like they're not going to see me again. It's not, until tomorrow.
I mean, I'm so glad that we saw you tonight because this has been so wonderful.
You guys are
Who better but Kelly Kalori Ben Simone to ring? I mean, the Satchels of Gold. I have to tell you, Satchels of Gold. It is meaningful to me to have you on stage.
But you know what's
so
funny? I did not even come up with that.
Who came up with it?
That was Bethany.
What?
She said, "You have Satchels of Gold." And I'm like, "What do you mean? I don't have Satchels of Gold." I had never said that.
What context would we be talking about satchels of any weighted metal?
She was making it seem like my shit doesn't stink and that I have so much money, it just comes pouring out of me and I don't care. I mean, I've been working since I'm 16 years old.
Hello.
I have 3 degrees. I mean, I'm like...
100 million in real estate.
Hello, are you like... what?
Well, I mean, I guess thanks to Bethany for her part in history.
Yeah, I mean, that's her one. That's her line. That has nothing to do with me. There were a lot of things that she said that I would, like, we would be in a conversation and you'd say, like, okay, you kind of repeat, if there's something, someone says it's something unusual, you kind of repeat it. And then they made it seem, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I never said that.
So she would repeat back to you moments that she said happened that you did not have recall of and then set the stage for a scene that's sort of expanding on that narrative.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds like strategic reality TV.
And to be honest with you, like, I don't have time to be strategic.
You don't.
I actually work for a living. Like, I have a real job. I was like, this is, like, supposed to be fun.
Those apartments aren't going to sell themselves.
No, at the time, you guys have to remember, when I was on, true story, but when I was on Housewives, I was working for Page Six. I had a full-time job at Page Six.
I remember that.
Like, I was like, I'm kind of busy working, so this is really fun. I'll hang out with you guys for a second, but I gotta, like, go back to work. And then my kids were so young.
See and Teddy. Is episode 500 a to-be-continued two-parter? You betcha. So stay tuned for more of episode 500 moments. These clips coming up soon.